This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For years, there was intense debate over sex ed. One writer called it the Middle East of the culture wars. Should the birds and the bees be the responsibility of teachers or parents? If it's taught at school, should the program emphasize no sex or safe sex? Just last week, President Bush, in his State of the Union message, stood up for abstinence programs and pledged to double the federal funds available for them. According to a National Public Radio Kaiser Kennedy School poll that's out today, the debate over whether to have sex education in schools seems to be over. Nearly all Americans agree sex ed should be in school, and most of them agree that teaching abstinence should be part of the program. You can find the results of that poll online at www.npr.org. Later in this program, we'll hear about a report that says punishments for youthful offenders in California include isolation in wire cages and sedation with prescription drugs. And after Howard Dean changed campaign managers yesterday, we'll talk about the history of presidential campaign shakeups. But first, abstinence, abstinence plus, and comprehensive sex ed. What's being taught in your child's school? Are you happy with it? Do you worry most about pregnancy, disease, or the emotional problems that can come with teenage sex? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN@npr.org. And joining us now in Studio 3A is NPR Senior Editor Marcus Rosenbaum, who's supervised this poll, and good to have you back on Talk of the Nation, Mark.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to be here.
First of all, the debate is over. What does that refer to?
Well, it refers to the debate over whether to have sex education. Only 7% of Americans, we found, say that sex ed shouldn't be taught in schools, and 90% of Americans say it's important to have sex ed as part of the curriculum. So, and, you know, we also found that even on the local level, the debate over what to teach is pretty much over. We surveyed principals in addition to surveying the general public with extra parents thrown in, and they reported that there just isn't much debate in their communities right now. But that doesn't mean that nationally everybody agrees with what ought to be taught.
Well, all right. We'll get to that in just a second. But you talk about the parameters of the poll. Who did you interview?
Well, we interviewed more than 1,000 Americans just by telephone, and we interviewed several hundred extra parents so that we could break the parents down into different categories, parents of 7th through 12th graders whose children might or might not have had sex education.
So extra to make sure you had a representative sample.
That's exactly right. To make sure we had a representative sample of sort of subgroups, you know, so that we could talk about white parents versus black parents, or we could talk about, you know, different categories of parents.
And the principals?
Principals, we had 300 and some odd principals randomly chosen from middle schools and high schools, public middle schools and high schools around the country.
Now, when it comes down to that question of how sex education is taught, is there debate over that? You say people say abstinence, sure.
Well, that's right. Now, but only 15% say that schools should teach abstinence only without talking about how to get and use condoms and other contraception. Almost half say that abstinence is best for teens, but not all teens abstain, so you really need to teach about these contraceptives. And then a little more than a third say that abstinence isn't the most important thing, that it's more important to teach kids how to make responsible decisions about sex.
And those correspond roughly to the three broad categories of sex education programs in the country today.
Yeah, the first two definitely do. The third one's a little bit iffier, but we wanted to ask a question that was a little bit softer and sort of seemed to get kind of more at the way it was taught as opposed to sort of a label of comprehensive, because comprehensive means different things to different people. There are a lot of places we found in our research that are teaching this abstinence plus who say this is a comprehensive program. So they define it as comprehensive. And, you know, I'll leave it up to you to decide what you want to do. I'd just like to say one other thing, too, about this, which is that despite all of this disagreement, we asked people a long list of things, whether they thought it ought to be included in sex education in schools, and vast majorities in virtually everything we asked about said yes, that you ought to talk about this, you ought to talk about that, you ought to talk about this. and so on and so forth.
In terms of actually what is being taught, I assume you got that from the principals poll.
Well, we did. And of course, you know, principals don't always know really what's being taught, but they certainly know what the policy of the school is. And mm-hmm. that's really what we're checking here. And what we found is that 90% of schools teach some kind of sex education now, according to the principals. Of those schools, about 30% teach abstinence only. About half teach this abstinence plus. And about 20% say that the abstinence isn't the most important thing side of that one. So
okay. Now, in your survey of the parents, what do they say they worry about in terms of sex ed?
Well, let me answer that in terms of what they worry about in terms of sex, because in terms
okay.
of sex ed, in fact, they're all pretty happy with what's being taught in their own child's school, which is one of the reasons why we think that there's not a lot of debate going on. Out there in terms of on the local level in particular schools, although there are pockets of it, of course.
Sure.
But we didn't ask about sex as just that word. We asked about intercourse because it's really hard to define what sex really is. So we asked parents what concerned them most about their own child ever having sexual intercourse. And about a quarter said pregnancy. About 30% said disease. That's either HIV or some other STD, and 36% though said that what they were most worried about was that their child might have sexual intercourse before he or she is psychologically or emotionally ready.
That's interesting.
I thought so too.
Let's get some callers on the line. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And we'll begin with Stephanie, who's with us from Berkeley, California.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, I have a son who just turned 18 yesterday. He's a student, a senior at Berkeley High School. He's been, I believe, sexually active for about the last year. But in the Berkeley schools, they've been receiving sex education of one sort or another since the second grade, when my son came home to tell us that you don't get AIDS from hugging and kissing. And his dad and I said, oh, really?
That's right. You picked your jaws up off the floor, yeah.
Right, and how do you get AIDS? And he said he didn't know that, but he just wanted to assure us it was okay to keep hugging and kissing.
Mm-hmm.
In the sixth grade, he was part of a program called Baby Get a Life, where he had a anatomically correct computer-programmed doll that he had to keep for 3 days that was programmed to wake up at 2 in the morning crying, and he had to hold it until it stopped crying.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would learn what it was like to have a baby to take care of. And all through school, I've watched what they've done. Primarily, it's teaching kids the consequences of behavior, pregnancy, disease, and so forth. And I'm very pleased with that. It was easier for him to learn about the mechanics of sex from school and learn about the value of relationships and sexual activity from home.
Hmm.
And it worked just fine. He practices safe sex, which is my greatest fear, that he'll catch a disease. And he's kind and considerate in his relationships. So I think it's been a very effective program. Abstinence is my business, not the school's. And I think it's a stupid idea anyway, if anybody's had any experience with teenagers.
Well, congratulations on your son's 18th birthday. And he's just graduated, you say?
Oh, no, he's got 6 more months to go, and then he's out the door.
Senioritis. Worry about that now.
Yes.
Thanks very much for the call, Stephanie.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. And Marcus, that raises a couple of interesting points, that call, one of which is local standards. Berkeley, a very different part of the country than Plano, Texas, for example.
Well, exactly. And I think this is what I was saying about how parents generally seem to be pleased with whatever the sex education their children are getting in school is.
And the other issue that she raises is sex ed since, you know, elementary school. Is that common?
I don't know, Neil, but my research shows me that it's not, that generally it starts in middle school and not in elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Now, she had some, she was critical of the idea of abstinence, but this, you talked about difficulty earlier of people defining what comprehensive sex ed means or really what abstinence plus, but there's a lot of debate over what abstinence means too, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, and actually this is one of my favorite parts of the poll from a sort of journalist point of view, which was that we asked a question, we read a statement, which is, abstinence from sexual activity outside marriage is the expected standard for all school-age children. And we asked that question because that's one of the things that, to get federal abstinence education money, you need to teach. And whatever people answer, however people answered that, and 62% said they agreed, but regardless of how they answered that, we then asked them, when you answered the question, did you mean abstaining from? And we gave them a list of things that they might mean abstaining from. Mm-hmm. And, of course, 95% said sexual intercourse, 89% said oral sex, 63% said intimate touching, 40% said passionate kissing, and 44% said masturbation. So I think it's just interesting that, Americans seem to have this really kind of broad view of what abstinence really means.
I should have put this question to our caller, but I'll put it to you in case you asked it in the survey. Parents worried about their children in terms of the various consequences of sex. Was there any difference whether that child was a son or a daughter?
You know, Neil, I wish I could answer that on this program, but I can't.
All right. Well,
I mean, we actually have that answer. I just don't have it right in front of me. I'm sorry.
But can you should go to our website.
Yes, go to the website. I'm not sure that will be there. But let me tell you one interesting thing about this, though, which is that in terms of asking how long boys or girls should wait to have sexual intercourse, mm-hmm. there was no difference between boys or girls. Americans, there was sort of no double standard that we found in that. So I know it's the case there. In terms of what they're worried about, I think there was a difference, but I can't tell you what it is, and I'm sorry.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Ruth, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
I am a sex educator. I've been teaching in colleges for a number of years, and I also am a sex therapist. And I have a couple of observations of what I'm seeing here and also a question. The first one is, I don't think sex education should be in either or, school or home, but there's no place that parents get education for how to talk with their kids. My second observation is that here we're seeing a real increase in unprotected oral and anal sex as a way to maintain virginity for girls. They do not consider this having sex. And then my question is, what's the research on the effectiveness of abstinence-only sex education?
Marcus, can you help her out?
I can help you out on the last one, which is that there isn't a whole lot. And in fact, right now, there is a large nationwide study being undertaken by a very reputable research organization. And their second report, their sort of interim report, is about to come out. And I talked to the woman who's directing it about 2 weeks ago, and she said, don't expect any sort of final answers here, that this is a longitudinal study. It's going to be 4 or 5 more years before we find out. And, of course, the reason is that these abstinence programs haven't been taught that long. And in order to judge their effectiveness, you really have to look at them over the long term. So,
correct that the only money for sex education coming from federal government is abstinence only?
No.
So there are ways to get money for sex education if you aren't teaching the abstinence only programs?
As far as I know, there are, but this abstinence money only goes to abstinence programs.
And quickly, Ruth, we're running out of time in the segment, but you talked about what kids regard as sex and what they don't. Is that anecdotal on your part, or are you citing research there?
I'm not citing research there. I'm citing interviews with people who are doing sex education in the schools and running groups for teenagers.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Sure enough.
Appreciate
thanks
the
for
phone call.
Program.
Okay. We're talking about sex education in America when we come back from a short break. The discussion of various types of sex education. What's the difference between abstinence and abstinence plus? We'll try to parse this out for you a little bit more. And, of course, we'll take more of your calls. Our number here is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. How do you define abstinence, and would your child agree with you? I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Mm-hmm. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A new NPR Kaiser Kennedy School poll on sex education in America was released today. In it, we find the debate over whether sex education should be taught in school is over. Americans, for the most part, agree it should. But there is still debate over how abstinence is discussed in the classroom. To see the results of this poll, you can go to www.npr.org. Most parents, though, feel abstinence should play some role in sex education, but what exactly is abstinence compared to abstinence plus? NPR senior editor Mark Rosenbaum is here with us in Studio 3A, and joining us now by phone from her office in New York City is Kay Heimowitz. She's a contributing editor at the City Journal. A few months ago, wrote an article on abstinence-only sex education classes for the Public Interest Journal, and it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil.
And, of course, we want to hear from listeners as well. 800-989-8255 or email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And, Kay Heimowitz, why is there confusion over what abstinence is?
Well, because we have a broad range of programs out there, there's one group that's known as abstinence only. These are, of course, the programs that receive federal funding from the Title V that you mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
Abstinence only means that that abstinence is the only choice for the kids, and there's very little taught about contraception, or at least contraception as it might be used. It's taught only as something that might fail.
Right.
Abstinence plus is the other end of the spectrum, you might say, but it can be anything from a mere mention of abstinence to, you know, a tremendous emphasis on contraception and the like, or a heavy emphasis on abstinence, but a lot of talk about contraception. In other words, as long as abstinence is being mentioned, you can be abstinence plus, no matter whether it's 5 minutes or many days of teaching on abstinence.
Let's talk about abstinence only for a minute. Are the programs that, you know, profess abstinence only, are they the same?
No, I mean, it is very difficult to talk about what abstinence only means, because we have over 700 programs being funded by the federal government at this point. There are at least 74 curriculums, and some of them are aimed at preteens, some are aimed at late teens, some are even aimed at young adults. Some of them are school-based, some are community-based, some involve community service, some involve school activities, some involve character education. I could go on and on. There's a tremendous variation.
Is there a common thread, though?
Well, of course, they have to subscribe to at least they can't break the rules of the 8 points defined by Title V. They have to teach that sex for kids is likely to have harmful and psychological and physical effects. They have to emphasize the risk of pregnancy and STDs. They tend also, as I mentioned before, to emphasize the failure rates of condoms. They also, where you might see among comprehensive sexuality education, an emphasis on risk reduction, abstinence-only teachers will talk about risk elimination.
Mm-hmm. Now, some critics would say that these are just teaching scare tactics.
Well, you know, that's been the most common charge against abstinence only, and there are certainly some programs who are worthy of that charge, but I think that it's a gross overstatement to see it that way at this point. Abstinence education has been around for a while now, and the programs are becoming increasingly sophisticated. Some of them are really trying to deal with the emotional and character development of children in fairly intensive and, I think, reputable ways.
Just wanted to clear up a question about funding that a caller brought up just before the break, and that's about federal money available for sex education programs. She asked, is it all to abstinence or abstinence plus programs? And as I understand it, there's a couple of different ways, and Marcus Rosenbaum, who's here with us, said no, other kinds of programs, sex ed programs, can also get federal money.
Yes, the confusion lies here. There are specific funds earmarked for abstinence-only education. For comprehensive sexuality education, there are no specific funds targeted, but there are federal funds going to such programs.
Okay, let's get some more listeners involved. Our next caller is Val, who's with us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to mention, I heard earlier somebody mention about not having any any classes, not too many classes on sex ed in elementary school, but some in junior high. And I this blows my mind because I went to a school originally in a small town in Georgia, and I took sex ed in the first half of ninth grade, which would be 1990. And as I recall, it struck me so funny because I'm taking this class on sex ed, and by the time we got into it, half of our class had already had sex in the seventh and eighth grade. And so I was wondering if any of your folks on the program today have any ideas about when it should start, when we should start teaching kids. Because, I mean, at the point that I took it, half my class could have taught the class themselves.
Yeah, Kay Heimowitz, I don't know if you were listening, but we had a caller earlier who said that her son in Berkeley, California, started sex ed in the second grade. So
right.
Is that common?
Well, I don't think with abstinence only it's especially common. Most of the programs are targeting middle school kids between about 9 and 14. That seems to be the general audience that they're looking at.
And is that closing the barn door after the horse has escaped?
Well, not statistically speaking. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but a very, very small number of 13- and 14-year-olds have had sex.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Val.
Hey, thank you.
One of the questions about the abstinence only and abstinence plus programs that a lot of people raise is, you know, aren't teens going to have sex almost no matter what? Shouldn't the focus be on teaching them safe methods?
Well, I would have thought so, actually. And it seemed like the horses had left the barn after the sexual revolution. But we've seen something remarkable happen in this last decade, and that is a real decline in the number of kids having sex. It's been substantial, and it's had an impact on teen pregnancy rates, and unfortunately, though, not on the rates of sexually transmitted diseases, as I can see.
It was interesting. At the beginning of the program, I swiped one of your lines that you wrote that sex ed is the Middle East of the culture wars. Is that still an accurate description, do you think?
I think it's a little bit subdued right now, but I think the war is still raging, really. There are organizations that have been created to try to fight the federal funding for abstinence education. There is a tremendous push from the abstinence-only people to make sure that their funding remains as well, it grows, if anything. So, yes, there's a lot of money and jobs at stake here. So, in addition to a big struggle over cultural values.
Neil, I just wanted to say that if you're going to talk about the decline in young people having sex, you have to, I think, be specific and talk about sexual intercourse, because I think that other things are not in decline. And in terms of what we were talking about earlier, in terms of how you define abstinence, I don't think that would mean that there's that many more children are actually being abstinent the way a lot of people define it. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get another listener on the line. This is Liz, who's with us from Chandler, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think this is a really important discussion. I had a comment in regards to what one of the previous callers talked about.
Uh-huh.
She said that she was seeing a raise in anal sex and oral sex, and for the sake of people being able to still say they're virgins.
Yeah, she was seeing an increase in that, yes.
Yeah, and she didn't have research, and I did read in a U.S. News and World Report research that did have the same finding,
mm-hmm.
and that was in about 2002, so it's probably gone up since then. And then, so I just wanted to put that out there. But I also have a question. I think abstinence-only programs are a little bit naive because I don't see how they can be effective when such a large percentage of teenagers are already sexually active.
Kay Heimowitz, is there research to indicate that these programs are effective, or research to indicate that they might be effective in some places and maybe not others, or what is it?
Right. Well, as your other guest mentioned earlier, it's simply too soon to tell. These programs have not been around that long, and the programs that have been around very long, longer period of time, are more a little cruder, shall we say. They tended to be straight didactic
examples of the just say no approach. And most people believe those don't work. But by the way, you know, there was very little evidence that any sex education was working for a very long time. I think the whole field of sex education is becoming more sophisticated, and you see on both sides of the fence, both among comprehensive sexuality educators and among abstinence-only educators, a growing understanding of how kids need to be talked to, and how they need to feel connected to their teachers and to really believe in what the teachers are saying. One thing we do know from the Mathematica study that, is it Marcus who mentioned earlier?
Right, yeah.
Is that you can change attitudes. At least you can change the way kids are talking about it. That much information we have. There is a growing number of kids who seem, who at least in what they say, believe in abstinence.
Liz, do you have experience with the discrepancy between what kids do and sometimes what they say?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I was a kid once, and I remember, you know, how kids thought compared to what their parents thought they were doing. And, I mean, I guess I also have a question about, I have a 13-year-old stepdaughter, and she hasn't had sex education in school because she goes to a small school. And do you guys have any recommendations on how people can approach their kids?
Kay Heimowitz?
Oh, I'm not in the business of giving advice of that sort. I think this is terribly personal. I'm one of those people who's not even sure it should be taught in school.
Well, Liz, thanks very much for the call, and good luck with the discussion whenever you have it.
Thank you.
And Kay Heimowitz, we wanted to thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Kay Heimowitz is a contributing editor to the City Journal and author of the book Ready or Not, What Happens When We Treat Children as Small Adults, and she was with us by phone from her office in New York City. And now joining us here in Studio 3A is Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, and it's good to have you back on the program, Sarah.
Thank you, Neil.
We just heard Kay Heimowitz tell us about abstinence and abstinence-only programs. What constitutes an abstinence-plus sex education program?
Well, Kay touched on this herself. A number of programs actually do take up contraception in some detail, and they talk not only about its failure rates and its limitations, but also its protective factors and its risk reduction capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of programs that, for example, will say that abstinence is an option. Some of them will even say it's the best option, and then they will go on to talk extensively about contraception, condoms, and so forth. Now, the problem with all this, of course, are the labels. And, you know, we should put out a dictionary or, you know, talking points and all these different words. I don't think most parents fully understand all these nuances and differences. I think they do understand a very firm abstinence-only curriculum
mm-hmm.
versus one that takes up contraception, not only its negatives, but also its positives.
Marcus, what does the survey show? Do parents seem to believe they understand what's going on?
Generally, they say that they have a fairly good knowledge of what's being taught in their child's school, yeah.
And they're happy with it, as we reported earlier.
They seem to like it pretty well.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. Now, is there one model that fits all schools? We're hearing a lot of different kinds of abstinence plus here.
Well, you know, I think it's naive in a country as complex and increasingly diverse as this one to think that any single curriculum is going to fit every age group, every faith tradition, every community, and so forth. So obviously, we're going to need a variety of approaches. But what strikes me about this survey that we're discussing today is that I really do think we have a consensus in this nation among the adults and the teens as well. And it's not just from this survey, but it's ones we've done and other groups, both liberal and conservative. And I think it goes something like this. Parents really prefer that their young people delay sex. Certainly not in middle school and probably not in high school. I often say, you know, it's until they're out of my house. And some people then go on to say, wait until marriage. Americans are also a very practical group, and they understand that a number of young people are sexually active and must have information. But they don't see these as sort of equal. They don't say, well, you know, sex with contraception is just as good as abstinence. They really do prefer a strong delay message. And I think that came out in this survey as it has in many others.
We're speaking with Sarah Brown of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy and NPR's Marcus Rosenbaum. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Marcus, you wanted to add
a
point?
Yeah, I wanted to just back up what you were just saying. We actually asked people to what age they thought boys, we asked half boys and half girls, and interestingly, we got the same numbers, whether it was boys or girls, should wait until they had sexual intercourse. And we had something like 30-odd percent, it looks like, saying, I'm sorry, 40, about 40-odd percent saying they should wait until marriage. And then we asked, how many do you think that boys or girls, whoever we're asking, will actually wait that long? And virtually all of them said no. So what I got out of this was, not about their own children now, we're talking about boys and girls in general, but what I got out of this was that they think that they ought to do this, they know they might do that, and that's probably why you've got about half the country saying that abstinence is important, but we ought to teach this other stuff too.
Well, let's get another caller on the line. Duneen, in New York City, joins us on the line. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, you are.
Good. Go ahead.
I'm just calling from New York City as a mother of two preteen daughters, and I'd like to say that starting sex education in the second and third grade shouldn't necessarily be considered sex education because there is a level and of self-esteem that surrounds sex.
Mm-hmm.
And starting in the ninth grade, I could see why the majority of the class, as that one caller was stating, has already had sexual intercourse. I think that sex education should be under a different name, more about self-esteem, and start at a much younger age.
Sarah?
Well, a couple of thoughts. First of all, we now know that one in five teens has had sex at least once by the 15th birthday. That's true for both boys and girls. So some of the findings in this survey that a lot of sex ed waits till 9th, 10th, 11th grade is missing the boat. I think, Neil, you said the horse is out of the barn.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we need to start earlier, and a lot of these abstinence programs, in fact, do start earlier, as Kay Heimowitz mentioned. I think the caller is right on to say that this is not just about sort of biology or body parts. I think what we're all coming to understand is this is a lot about not just attitudes, but couple communication about values and morals and so forth. And when you ask young people what influences your decisions, they talk often about parents, and they talk often about their own values and morals and beliefs. And so I think we're beginning to understand that all of these curricula, the common meeting ground, is to talk about this in a broader perspective and not just the old model, which I think is increasingly discredited, of just sort of the diagrams on the blackboard. Mm-hmm. And I think the caller points that out.
What are your kids learning there in New York City, Deneen?
They're learning self-esteem, which is they go to the Earth School, and they give the child a voice. And in this world where sex is so pronounced, it seems as though you can't just say no. It's all around. And as sexuality is pushed into the general public, they're expecting children to just say no. So to combat that, we're trying to give our children a voice and an understanding of them, their body, and that they have the ability to make a choice. And making a choice doesn't mean abstinence. It means making a choice and hopefully make the right choice.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
And thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
We're talking about a recent NPR Kaiser Kennedy Foundation poll on sex education in public schools. We'd like more of your calls. When we come back from a break, we're going to wrap up this discussion. We're also going to be talking about a report out of California that shows examples of what some might consider abuse in youth offender programs. And we'll also be talking about campaign shakeups. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, join Ira Flatow and his guests on the next Science Friday. They'll check in with the Mars probes, get the latest on particle physics, and talk about the fate of the Hubble Space Telescope. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're discussing sex education and abstinence and parents' reaction to both. Our guests are Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, and NPR's own Marcus Rosenbaum, senior editor in charge of the NPR Kaiser Kennedy School Study on Sex Education in America. To join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And Sarah Brown, I wanted to ask you, we've discussed before in the program the fact that pregnancy rates in this country are going down. And is that attributable, do you think, to sex education programs?
Well, I think that sex education has undoubtedly played a role in it, but I have a feeling that we're all kind of overestimating the impact of sex ed on teen behavior just in general. I mean, this survey alone showed that most sex education curricula are a few hours in a year. Mm-hmm. Many of them, you know, just several classes, I think was the phrase. Many of them start kind of late. And if you think about it, these health classes have to cover nutrition, you know, obesity, alcohol, drugs, violence, smoking. And, you know, as compared to the time that young people spend in front of television, with movies, on the internet, and the time they spend over 18, 20 years with their friends and their parents, you know, the notion that a few hours a year is going to dramatically shape something as complex as sexual behavior, I think is just, again, overestimated. It's not that it's not important and we should be talking about it. But, you know, if I had to put my money on a sector, I'd probably emphasize a lot more about parents and families and also the entertainment media.
Let's get another listener on the line. Tom is with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 9 and an 11-year-old in the school district which teaches or seems to coordinate the sociology of alternative families with sex education. And I was wondering if there has been any studies conducted as far as that influencing sexual preference or has that influenced the types of things being talked about within the classroom.
So in other words, Tom, are your children being taught about same-sex couples and same-sex sex in sex ed?
That is correct.
Okay.
And when it appears to be coordinated with the sociology.
Okay.
And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks very much for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Sarah, do you have any information for him?
Well, one of the things I noted in the survey was that parents and adults were asked, as Marcus mentioned, about what topics do you want to have covered in sex ed. And, you know, same-gender relationships was one of many, many topics that apparently adults nationwide want to have schools discuss. On the more particular question the caller asked, I have some anecdotal information, but nothing that's ready for prime time.
Okay. The shuffling of paper you heard was Marcus Rosenbaum going through the results to get some answers for him.
And I can't find the numbers, but I can tell you the answer, okay, which is that we did ask parents what they wanted taught about homosexuality in schools. And what we found was that most of them want homosexuality taught sort of what it is, but neither that it's acceptable or that it's unacceptable. It's kind of right down the middle there.
Okay. Sarah?
Let me just add one other thing. I was very amused with one particular finding of the survey, which is that one of the things a lot of parents wanted was to have their kids taught how to talk to the parents about sex. And we were sitting around our office saying, wait, hold on. Isn't it the responsibility of the adults to initiate these conversations over many years? Why are we teaching children how to talk to parents? Parents have to deal with these issues. They have to talk about it, even if they're uncomfortable. They have to figure out ways to use the media and life experience to have these conversations. And, you know, I love the help of education in schools, but we can't fob this off on the schools to the extent that we're even training our children about how to raise these issues. Mm-hmm. Parents have to step up to the plate here.
As you looked at this study, did anything leap out at you? Did anything surprise you other than that?
Oh, goodness. You know, I have endless tolerance for this, and I loved reading it. I think that the point of consensus that we discussed earlier about how really almost no matter which group is asking the questions, that I think this nation is on pretty solid footing of really wanting young people to be taught that delay is in their best interest, and again, some till marriage, but also recognizing that we can't just talk about the bad news about contraception and condoms. We have to cover the full waterfront. These young people live in highly sexualized environments. We just published some material last week with Me Productions on inner city African American teens, and we asked them, you know, how about sex education and how about abstinence? And so much of these little curricula are just irrelevant to the pressures on them and the complexity of their lives. So we need to deal with where young people are, not just where we might wish they could be.
And again, you can look at the results of this survey at www.npr.org. And Marcus Rosenbaum, before we let you go, is there additional coverage that people can expect to hear on NPR over the next few days?
I'm so glad you asked that, Mr. Neil.
just popped into my head that question.
Starting this afternoon on All Things Considered, Wade Goodwin has a really interesting sort of survey of an abstinence-only program in middle school in Dallas. Tomorrow night, there'll be a similar type of a piece on a more comprehensive program at a high school in Maine. Tomorrow morning, there's a little piece from a young woman from Youth Radio, where we sent her out to talk to people about what abstinence is. And there'll be several more over the next week or so. So stay tuned, please.
Interesting stuff. Marcus Rosenbaum, thanks very much. He's NPR senior editor here with us in Studio 3. Also here, Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. Thanks very much, as always.
Thank you.